Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app for your smart device, CairoRadio.com, and the all-new Adore Network at Adore.fm. Let's get started with the episode. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 264 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom indeed, folks. Boom indeed. We've got some big news to share with you this week. We've also got a great guest. A great guest for this week's episode, Jamie Kennedy, the one and only Jamie Kennedy. You may recognize him from such movies as Scream or Malibu's Most Wanted or the Jamie Kennedy Experience. This guy was everywhere in the 90s. We're going to be talking with him about a whole range of topics, namely how he got into the industry, how he got into comedy. All that good stuff. How he grew up with like seven brothers and sisters, which is just insane. Makes a lot of sense. He became an actor. Got to get that attention from somewhere, man. Right? Yeah. That's why I do a podcast. Although I only had one brother, but I didn't get a lot of attention. Right? So I had to start a podcast because I'm not moving to LA. Plus, I wouldn't make a good actor. That's about it. Welcome to the show, everybody. As you heard in the pre-roll there before the show started, we have joined a new network. Yeah, man. Everybody take a moment just to soak that in. Just to soak that in. We're really proud to announce that we have joined the Adore Network, an all-new network of wonderful podcasts. All in one spot, man. Powered by Spreaker.com. I don't know if many of you use Spreaker. But it's a service much like Stitcher, but it's better, okay? It's totally better. With 27 million users, Spreaker is basically climbing to the top of the podcasting app, what do you say, tower? What is that? Something like that. Yeah, yeah. How does that saying go? Forget it. It's over. We're just going to keep on rolling, man. Keep on rolling. I'm not going back on that. Yeah, we're super excited. Super, super excited. This was something I announced it last week on the Facebook page. If you're not privy to that, you should go like the Facebook page, the Air Raid Podcast Facebook page, or follow us on Twitter or something like that. And you can find out about this news early as it happens. Okay, it's been something that's been in the works for a couple months now. And we've finally announced that this network has launched, and you can find it at Adore, that's Adore.fm. And it's got a lot of great content up there right now, folks, and more to come. So please go and check that out and like them on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, the Adore Network. It's going to be good, man. It's going to be good for the show. As you may have noticed too, we have not left our partnership with Cairo Radio, Bonneville International. We have not left our partnership with that. Both networks were fine with me staying on both networks, for lack of a better term. So we're doing that too. But hopefully this helps out and gets our name out there, gets more people listening to the show, because that's what we like, man. That's what we want to do. We want to grow this thing as big as we can go. All right, and nothing's gonna suffer. So don't worry about that. We're still gonna be doing the same show. We still own the content that was written into the contract, And we're just going to keep on going the way we have been. I'm still going to be producing the show. I'm still going to be hosting the show. We're still going to be bringing you amazing music and amazing guests each week. So, we're just going to keep on trucking, man. By the way, we will be switching over everything to the new host, which is going to be Spreaker and the Adore Network. So if there's any hiccups in content, if you can't, access something, please let us know about it. Email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net, and we'll try to get that worked out. But please, if there's any problems whatsoever that you find with the show and how you get it, please let us know about it, because in the coming days, we're going to be switching all that stuff over, and hopefully that all works fine and there's no problems whatsoever. There shouldn't be, but if there is, let us know. And you can still find all the archived episodes at our website, air-raid.net, all 264 episodes with comedians like Bob Saget, Jim Brewer, Aisha Tyler, Mike Birbiglia, Eddie Pepitone, Duncan Trussell, Pete Holmes. Man, the list goes on and on and on. We've been doing this show for 6 years, right? Or 5 years. 5 years. It just keeps on going. Bands like Pearl Jam, Death Cab for Cutie, Meat Puppets, Mudhoney, Macklemore. Yeah, man, that guy, he was on the show a little while ago. Presidents of the United States of America. Yeah, man. Guns N' Roses, founding member of Guns N' Roses, Duff McKagan, on the show. All right there, still at the archives tab at air-raid.net. So go and check that out. I've been on a little bit of a journey. Before we get into this chat with Jamie Kennedy, I've been on a little bit of a journey this week. I don't know if you guys have heard about these journeys, but it's called painting the exterior of your house. I thought I could do it. I thought, we don't have the money to pay somebody else to do it, and it needs to be done because the color of our house is just like this rancid green color. I don't know if that evokes anything in your psyche, but it's ugly. It's ugly. I hate it. I hate it. I enunciated that weird. But anyway, so I started painting. Everything was going fine. 9 hours pass, and I'm barely done. I'm barely done. The next day, start painting. 8 hours pass. I'm still barely done. I've got nothing to show for it. It looks good. It's looking great. The next day, 6 hours. You see how the progression is going? I'm working less and less, and less is getting done. And it just feels like this project's going to go on for fucking ever, man. This journey sucks. That's all I got to say. You want to help me paint my house, listener? Can you come over here and help me finish this up, man? Oh, my God. I realized that once I started painting, after the eighth hour of painting on the first day, I was like, man, I fucking hate this. I hate this. I used to be a painter in college. I used to paint for a company in college. And I got pretty good at it, got pretty quick, even to the point where I would like choose to go up on the roof, even though I'm afraid of heights. But I would just lay on the roof in a weird, spot that they couldn't see me. And I would just take a nap for, half an hour or so up on the roof because we started really early. But I can't do that on my own house. Can't do it here, man. Because the only boss that I got is me. And if I see, me taking a nap somewhere, I might have to fire myself, and then I'd have to hire somebody else, which sucks. I'm not going to do that. But I'll keep you updated. I know this is very, very interesting stuff. You want to know how far I get on the painting of my own house. So, we'll keep you updated on how that goes, right? Okay. Oh, man. We got some music sent to us by a wonderful little cassette label, little label. They're doing vinyl too. They sent us some vinyl from Jesse down in LA. Runs a label called Sunburned Goth, man, down in LA. Awesome name for a label. And they sent us this little EP by the Pretty Flowers, one of the bands on their label, and we're going to be featuring music from them this week. And they got a couple shows coming up. Let's see. Pretty Flowers playing, The Echo in L.A. on August 31st. And then September 11th, they're playing the Old Town Pub in Pasadena, California. So go and check that out if you're around. And also check them out on Facebook. Like them there. Follow them, their exploits, okay? Because they're really good. And this little label, give that little label some love too. Sunburned Goth, man. You gotta be wise to come up with a name like that for a label. That's an amazing label name. All right, let's get into it, shall we? We're talking with Jamie Kennedy, man. All over the place in the 90s. I loved this guy. And then got to meet him, got to talk with him, and it was fantastic. He's got some dates coming up. He's doing stand-up. He was up here in Seattle at the Parlor Live, doing stand-up there, a couple dates. Let's see, what's coming up for Jamie Kennedy? Friday, September 4th at Tempe Improv in Tempe, Arizona. He's also there on the 5th and the 6th, and then he's got some dates in October as well. So go to jamiekennedy.com and find out more. All right, let's get into it, shall we? This is the Pretty Flowers, and let's see, what song are we going to go with first? Let's go with My Alchemist, the name of the EP, or the 7-inch. Yeah, there we go, My Alchemist, the Pretty Flowers. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears, with special guest this week, Jamie Kennedy, of the movie Scream, Scream 2, Malibu's Most Wanted, The Jamie Kennedy Experience, and just tons other... Ghost Whisperer? Yeah, he was in that too, man. Oh my God. This is a great conversation. You guys are going to love it. The Pretty Flowers, My Alchemist. We'll be right back.
Relationship with hipsters, but I think hipsters are good because they take over these places and start their own little local spots, and that's
like charcuterie places.
Totally,
you know, like that's
gastropubs,
the thing, right?
All this stuff is all hipsters, and it might be in the worst part of town, but they're kind of revitalizing areas.
Yeah, small business, man.
I think it's because they don't like working for the man; they do their own thing.
That's right.
This is a weird intro. I like it though. Weird, good way to start,
isn't it?
Yes. What's your name?
I'm Aaron.
Aaron Jamie.
Jamie, nice to meet you.
What's this podcast called?
It's called the Air Raid Podcast.
How does it do?
It does pretty well.
It's just like there's so many podcasts, and there's like, I wonder how people find them, and there's a lot of them that are just rambling.
That's a, you know, have you ever thought about doing your own?
People have told me, and it's like, I'd only want to do it if I could, you know, I have to each week have a topic. And I hate that everybody has to have a gimmick. I would just like to talk.
Right, right.
So if I could break through all the noise, I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But it seems like there's 1 billion podcasts.
There are. And it's hard. For, you know, and this is a topic near and dear to my heart, so we can talk to it, talk about it, you know, forever. But, it's hard, you know, for a guy like me. I'm not, you know, I didn't have a following when I started it.
Uh-huh.
You know, but we've been going for like 6 years.
Wow.
And doing things like this.
Uh-huh.
You know, talking to people like yourself, professionals.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you know, it's gained a following.
That's good.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're good people.
Yeah.
They like coming to the live events. They like, you know, listening in each week and learning about people and music and all that good
stuff. So will you do a live podcast?
We do, yeah.
And will you sell how many tickets?
Probably 100 per event.
That's good.
And that's usually a sellout.
And that's like $20.
No, it's quite a bit less than that. The first one that we did, we made it because I was super nervous about it. It was like $7, and then I lost my shirt on it, Jamie.
You
I
did
lost my shirt. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, like when one of the biggest comics in the world, Louis C.K., is charging like $4 a download.
Mm-hmm.
You have to figure, okay, the price point has changed.
Well, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Live is different, but I mean,
yeah, but then the second one we did, of course, I had to up the price. It was like 17 or something like that, or 12, I think. Yeah.
That's good.
And that one we were able to recoup a couple hundred bucks and pay everybody that came and did it, and so yeah. Yeah. It was good.
All right.
Yeah. So when's the Jamie Kennedy podcast starting?
Well, I would like, I would only do it if I could talk about... I wouldn't want a format.
Sure.
I would want to sometimes interview... I would interview all types of people.
Yeah.
Sometimes... I only listen to a few podcasts so far, and it's like... seems like Joe Rogan goes and does multiple things. Like,
yeah.
I was listening to him last week talking about bulletproof coffee, and then there's other times he'll talk about legalization of marijuana, and then Bill Burr... I don't think he interviews anyone, and I was listening to him, and he was just making amazing points by himself.
Yeah.
And then there's other people that each week interview, and there's other people that have gimmicks, and I think I would tend to go more into the talking one and talk about, you know, ideas and things and
sure
that type of shit. So if I could, if I do believe it would help, I would do it. But then sometimes I wonder, because it's like we've now crossed the line of what Hollywood used to be,
mm-hmm.
until what it's completely not anymore.
Which how do you mean?
Mystery.
Yeah.
So
that's totally true.
Yeah. I mean, dude, it used to be such an exclusive, amazing, wild club. Like, if you ever read any books, like Marlon Brando's biography is an amazing book, and he talks about the premiere Man's Chinese. You ever been to Hollywood? You ever been to Los Angeles?
I have been to Hollywood. It was a long time ago.
On like where they have the Oscars as a Man's Chinese theater.
Right.
And he said that premieres used to stretch all the way down to a street called Gower, which is, it could be almost a mile.
Yeah, yeah.
That's insane.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And he was like, it was so special. And this, and he died before a lot of this stuff got big, but
mm-hmm.
it just feels like there's like not a, it's like there's great because you see it's good and bad all, but it just feels like it's no, there's no mystery anymore.
Well, people are stripping that away because they're being way more personable, right? Everybody is out there on social media, you know, talking about their day or, you know, talking about what, you know, kind of shit they're going through.
Yes.
Whether it be Twitter or Facebook or a podcast, you know, something like that. So, yeah, you do strip away, like, the whole, like...
The interesting stuff of people when they do that...
Yeah.
Like, when they're interesting, is great. Like, when people are really real, really vulnerable... Really, just, you don't have to try. They are just a naturally interesting entity.
Yeah.
I'll watch that all day.
Right.
But also, I do like my movie stars, and I like the fact that Jennifer Lawrence isn't on any social media because I like, you know, there's still some mystery there.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
I mean, a little less mystery since she got hacked, but, you know, but it, so it's a totally fascinating new world. So I kind of came to Hollywood in the late 80s and.
Yeah.
And it was like...
Is that what kind of drew you to it? Like the mystery of Hollywood?
No, no, not at all. I just wanted to be famous.
Yeah.
I did. I just wanted attention. And I started as an extra and I want... I really... Because I'm a child. I'm one of six kids and I was the baby of my family and I always felt... Yeah, I always felt like I didn't get enough attention.
Where are you from?
I'm from Philly.
Philly originally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Big Catholic family or something?
Totally.
Yeah?
Big Catholic family. And I didn't have any dreams or aspirations. I knew, like, when I was 15, people told me I was good at voices.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, you should do something with that. And then I moved to L.A. because I was an extra in the Dead Poets Society.
Yeah.
And then I decided I'm going to be an extra out in L.A. And then it was only, like... That's how I started, but I was only through, like, attrition and things I learned. And people told me, like, hey, you're funny. You should try comedy. And I didn't know what that was. I knew it. I didn't follow it.
Yeah.
And I tried improv, and I did that. And then,
were you ever afraid of getting up on stage in front of people, or was that never a thing?
Yes, very much so. Like, getting up on stage and not being good. Looking people in the eye, having them judge you. I did it once, and I was in a contest, and I came in second.
My first for a contest for stand-up
comedy.
Really?
And I was like, wow, this is awesome. This is pretty easy. And then I went again, and I bombed horrifically.
Yeah.
And then I didn't go on stage for probably like 6 months.
Really?
Yeah, I was completely petrified.
Yeah.
And then I went again, and I bombed. And I waited another, like, month, and then slowly. And then I hooked up with this kid, Eric Edwards. Shout out to Eric. And he told me, if you really want to be a good comedian, you got to be ready for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You got to play black clubs.
And this was a comedian?
Yeah, so this was probably 1990.
Uh-huh.
So I started playing, like, late night strip clubs. There was a club in Hollywood called World, and they had like a club in the back. They do comedy. I'm looking at this great poster of DL here, who is my co-star on a new show I'm doing, which is Full Circle, but he used to host a show back in the day at this place called Comedy Act Theater.
Yeah, we're talking about DL Hughley here.
On 43rd and Crenshaw.
Uh-huh.
And so I would go there, and I would do comedy, the first two times I did really well.
Yeah.
And then I stopped being, like, you know, the pet, like the only white guy in the club. And then I started bombing again. But for like the first two tries, they were like, damn, this kid's got some balls. Let's go, motherfucker. And then the third time they introduced me, they go, all right, give it up for Jerry Kennedy.
Really?
And they got me wrong. And I said, they said, run your ass out the club. And I ran. But I used to watch a lot of Showtime at the Apollo, and I thought the best thing for a comedian is to play. Actually, not just black clubs. Play any club that is hostile, because you'll get better.
It's like put yourself into uncomfortable situations, and you're basically forced to, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like Tiger Woods. He talks about his dad. I mean, or reports about his dad. He's a Vietnam guy.
Uh-huh.
Screaming in his putts and... You know, throwing like sticks near him when he was putting.
Really?
Yeah, just like really hardcore shit to make him that guy.
So you could just tune everything else
out.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was my early beginning.
Well, let's go back a little bit. So you grew up in Philly. You were born and raised there?
Yeah, I was from Philly, outside of it. It's called Upper Darby.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of like where there's a lot of people there now from that area that are in the business. So I grew up on a city called 69th Street.
Okay.
So I was kind of like more on the suburban side of 69th Street. Now, on the other side was more like a black and Puerto Rican neighborhood. And so on my side, as people have come out of the industry now, it's crazy. Well, the first person to come out of my neighborhood was a guy named Todd Rundgren.
I know. Yeah, yeah, totally.
The OG.
I know who that is. Yeah.
And then I heard Seth Green was from Overbrook. Kevin Bacon, he was from a place called Villanova.
Uh-huh.
I heard Ryan Phillippe was somewhere around that area. And then, you know, Bradley Cooper was more Philly, more Norristown.
Yeah, yeah.
Tina Fey was from my neighborhood, but I didn't know her because we went to different schools.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, like Will Smith, he's from Philly.
Dang, man.
I know. As the years go, there's more and more people coming.
Your neighborhood is just breeding it.
I don't know if anyone knew each other, but, but it was an interesting place to grow up.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, was it? I know nothing about it. Is it a smaller suburban area?
Philly?
Yeah.
No.
Of Philly.
It was great because I could go and experience the city.
Mm-hmm.
But like I tell people like this, it's like any true, you know, privileged white kid, I could go experience the city like a ride and then get back on the subway and run back home to safety.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I took all the great things from, you know, black culture and didn't have any of the oppression, which is terrible, but
yeah, sure.
You know, but that's how I learned about hip hop, basketball, you know, breakdance and everything. I would go into the city. My mom, to this day, still wants to take the subway, but she can, you know, it's hard for her to stand. But she was like always encouraged us to take the subway. And yeah, so we would take the subway everywhere. And
yeah,
as a young child, I just got to see every type of race, color, creed, you know, men kissing men. And so I encourage that, to put your kid out there and see the world.
Yeah. Were your parents like practicing Catholics or
very much?
Really?
My mom is a huge.
But they didn't mind getting you involved in being a city kid and seeing how other people lived and everything like that. It wasn't very sheltered, it sounds like.
Yes and no. I mean, like, they weren't. Oh shit!
The lights just went out.
Oh shit! That was weird, dude.
Is this
still on?
Is it on timer?
Put it back. That's scary. Oh,
there we go.
Damn.
It's a motion sensor. Okay. We got it.
No, the thing about it is that they just didn't. I don't think they look at it in terms like that. They just look at it like, hey, we work in the city. We got to get to the city. Best practical way is to take the subway. It wasn't like. That's what's cool. Kind of cool. They didn't look at everything as like different sections. They just looked at it as the city.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I had curfews and shit like that.
Right, right. But, did you go to church too?
Yeah, my mom was a very, very strict Catholic. Yeah. My dad wasn't really. So, I used to do this joke. I used to say, I was actually never touched by a priest, which makes me feel I wasn't even cute. So, I had to join the Boy Scouts. Yellow.
I like it.
Just to feel better looking.
A hit. Dink. An absolute hit.
My mom is such a Catholic, and like when all the stuff came out about like priests, she goes, few bad apples. I'm like, there's 100,000 cases. Just a few. A few bad apples. 100,000 cases. Yeah. Just a touch.
Yeah. But there's millions. There's millions of good Catholics. Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Did you leave the religion?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I was ever really in it. I mean,
you're
just kind of like, you're born, right? And you're this, like, thing. And people are like, here, blah, go here.
Uh-huh.
Blah, and walk there. Blah.
Did it ever make sense to you, though? Like, or were you constantly questioning what was like, going on?
Well, I question everything.
Yeah?
But, yeah, I don't know. It was all scary, dude. It's like, I mean, to this day, I'm
it's all fire and brimstone, right?
Yeah, I'm a rational person, and I'm still thinking, like, fuck, is there hell? Like, what if I did this? Like, could I, like, go to a place where, like, there's demons, like, sitting on my chest and,
yeah,
you know, firing at me? I mean, I pretty much don't think that, but you never know, right? I mean, it is fucking scary. I mean,
right.
I mean, like, I don't think there's this other place, though, that we float and everyone's wearing white and, like, under waterfalls either. I don't know about that, but I'm more, like, getting into science.
Yeah?
And just, like, that's where I think it's headed, like, scientific proving of things.
Yeah, yeah. I read you on that one.
Yeah, that's where my...
Yeah.
As I get older.
I have the same questions, though, too. I was never raised as a religious person. My dad was very, very staunch atheist.
Oh, okay.
You know? And so he was kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, always telling me, like, this is bullshit and stuff like that.
Oh.
But I've grown up, you know, it's just like, nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
So I stick firmly in the agnostic range, I think.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's probably pretty healthy.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty healthy.
I think it's rational.
It's a healthy spot to be. Right, right.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know where
So you're growing up, you're the smallest of the six kids or the youngest of the six kids?
I'm the youngest. I'm the biggest, but I'm the youngest.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What did your brothers and sisters end up doing?
They're all over
the
place.
They all good?
They're, like, different. I mean, like, I don't, like, I look at people, like, families and shit and, like, Walmart commercials and, like, you know, like, ads for, like, American Express. Like, that's not my family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My family's, like, out there. Like, I got a brother who, you know, he's a very smart stock commodities trader. So he's worked in London. He's worked in Philippines. Now he works over in Hong Kong on the stock market. I got a sister that, like, works with war veterans. Like, when they come home, she's, like, their legs are blown off. And she's like, come on, you can walk. Like, the most horrific shit.
Oh, my God.
I know, like, real shit. And then I got my sister is a professor in Australia. They're all different.
Wow.
I know. And I'm an actor, a comedian. So we're all types.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my parents are very normal. And I think they always encouraged us to kind of just... They never really encouraged us to do anything. They just kind of let us kind of do our thing. I mean, they weren't exactly totally, like, my mom is very, very practical, like, normal, like, 9 to 5, you know, bridge club.
Yeah.
And my dad is, like, a wild out there animal, crazy thinker.
Yeah.
So I think we kind of heart between that. That's why we're kind of, like, in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, what does your dad do, or what did he?
He worked for a General Electric. He had some job, a machinist. I don't know exactly what they do.
Okay,
but he was always talking about, you know, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies.
Really?
Oh yeah, big time. And he's always into that.
Yeah,
and so question everything. And I mean, like, I was just thinking about this today. It's like, the world is so, like, when the fuck are we gonna fucking stop being so fucking uptight? So, like, last night I'm here in Seattle, and this is a progressive city, you know, top 5, top 10, right?
Sure, sure.
You know, sometimes I look at Seattle, though, I was thinking about this today. There's definitely some people in Seattle, like, that were, like, on their way down from, like, Alaska or whatever, on their way to L.A. to, like, you know, follow the dream, and, like, the car broke down in Seattle.
Right, right. And they were, like, just like, well,
yeah,
we're here.
I mean, this is a nice city. So, like, you definitely have, like, a few people that just, like, what? I came here, and my doorman said to me yesterday, he's like, hey, man, I'm here. I came here for vacation, never left, you know. Or you definitely have some, definitely, like, this could be, like, a mix of transient city and also, like, you know, professionals. And, you know, it's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
But it's kind of has its... has an LA vibe to it where, you know, people can come here and pass through.
It's definitely getting more that way.
You've got a great mix of super high end professionals, you know, hipsters that are, you know, disenchanted with the man, you know, homeless, you know, superstar athletes. You've got tourists. I mean, you've got a great mix of people here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was thinking about this last night. I did this joke, and I do this joke, and I say, I think the dating scene's all, like, it's going to be ruined now because we disrupt so much through technology. And that's going to happen in our personal lives. And I do this thing, like, if I'm dating a girl now, I got to do what? I got to send her a dick pic. And, like, even in this city, like, women are like, no, no, don't you dare, no, oh, my God. And I do this whole joke, and, and eventually they laugh and all this stuff. And the whole thing is like, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, are you out of your, this is what I don't get. You're fucking 38 years old. You fucking were born. How the fuck do you think you got here? You didn't get here by a fucking bird, okay? You got here by a dick going in a fucking vagina. And, like, I can't believe that people are so uptight about sex in our day and age and things when everything is so fucked up. Look at all of the fucking fucked up things that just happened in the last 6 months.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everything is transparent. And I think that, I think it has to come back to advertising and religion. I think it has to be, like, you know, I mean, I don't want to touch on this fucking subject because it's such a fucked up, but like a fucking biggest fucking fast food thing in the world is what? Subway.
Okay.
And their fucking face of that is now like a horrific pedophile.
Right.
And like,
I just read yesterday that he is going to cop to paying for sex with, like,
dude,
like,
he already copped. This was 2 days ago.
Really?
And it's like,
I gotta start paying more attention.
Subway's like, Jesus. Hey, we're no longer affiliated with Jared. We don't condone his actions. Bye.
It's like, yeah.
No, that's not how it fucking works, Subway.
Right.
You fucking sit there and put this fucking skinny fat guy in our face for 15 fucking years and said, hey, come in the Subway, eat like fat fuck, get skinny. Oh, by the way, he does some horrific shit on the side. No, they gotta fucking make reparations. They gotta be like, this is fucked up. Let's fucking give some money to fucking the families. Which no amount will ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Take place of what happened.
That's a really good point.
Let's give money to shelters. Let's talk about how fucked up this is.
Yeah. The one thing that I was thinking about when I heard about it yesterday is that they're probably, I mean, they're forever going to be associated with us.
Oh, for sure.
And the I would actually be surprised if they don't go out of business.
Wow.
Don't you think? I mean, something like that, like, that's a big fucking thing, man.
Like, it's a big horrific thing.
Yes.
It's a big horrific thing. And I think that,
don't you think something like that
could
put
right.
them out of business?
It really,
I mean,
could.
Or they'd have to change their name and change everything about their who knows, man? L-Train? I don't know.
What the fuck am I going to change it to? But here's the thing. It's like
light rail.
Light rail. I mean, there's so much shit going around right now. But,
yeah.
It's just, I don't even like to joke about it because it's just too fucked up. But like, they just like, okay, he's not associated with us. Oop. It's like, oh, here, what we don't have in our culture right now is what I like to call after surge.
Yeah.
Besides empathy. After surge is like this. You're standing there, and you're at a nice day with your grandmother, right?
Yeah.
Or somebody in your family.
Sure, sure.
And you're at brunch, and you looked all nice. And I come, and I say, hey, what's up, bro? How are you? And you go, good. And I fucking hit you with a crowbar in the stomach.
Yeah.
And then I go, sorry, man. I'm psychotic. And you go, okay, man, it's cool. Just fuck, don't do that. I'm fucking hurt, right? What we're not talking about is the fact that you have all of these shocked feelings, and it's probably not going to go away maybe for 3 days, and even though,
well, something like that might require some surgery.
Yeah,
well, there might be some internal bleeding.
Like, what I'm saying is after surge, meaning the effects of what happens.
Okay.
And so, like, the fact that Jared did this thing, and it's not just the Subway thing, it's many things in our society right now.
Right, right.
There's all these ripple effects, and no one deals with them. And it's like Subway's like, okay, we're not with him anymore, bye.
Yeah.
No! There's a fucking massive amount of fucking after surge. And people just think, oh, the cut off the cancerous part. our body's clean now. No.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
that's the big thing in our culture right now. I don't think there's empathy. I don't think there's common sense. I don't think there's fucking... I don't think there's... People don't question enough. I think there's too much repression. I think there's too much crazy... It's just... Transparency is the new religion, man. It's
right.
fucking everything. I mean, there's a big Ashley Madison hack. That's gonna fucking... Did you hear about that, right?
The are you speaking about the Dugar family, that guy?
Oh, they're that guy too. I mean, Jesus Christ, if you ever believe that fucking guy. I mean, people like that scare the shit out of me. That's when like people make fun of me because I have this beard. I'm like, really? Well, beware of the man who's always smiling. That's what my mom always said.
Right.
So it's like all that shit is out the window. But it's like I'd much rather trust a hipster with a fucking neck tattoo than I do a fucking guy who's clean shaven.
Sure.
But like.
No, what's the Ashley Dugar, Madison hack?
Dugar, that's another whole thing. But Ashley Madison is the...
That's the cheating website, right?
Yeah. So now all these people, there's like 38 million registered users. It got hacked, and they're going to release all these names, and there's going to be like some high-profile fucking executives that are going to be like fucked. And the whole thing is, it's like, I think...
That's actually pretty funny.
It's fucked up, though. It's all fucked up. Well, it's funny for you, but not if you're like a CEO of fucking, like, you know,
Bear
Stearns.
I guess not, but shit, you're going to a fucking website to cheat on your spouse, you know?
I agree, but if you're making $55 million a year and you got this great life, whatever. The bottom line is this.
Yeah.
I think we have to be honest in our culture, and I'm looking at this in my life, and it's like, you really can't live a lie anymore.
No.
You really can't.
Well, you can't live it online. I mean, you can't.
But just we're all going to be fucking disrupted. And that's the thing, and it's just like, it went way back to what I was saying earlier about the dick pic. I don't understand why, like, women were, like, getting uptight about that joke. So it's like, it's the way the world is. I mean, you know, we're all, men are horny, you know, people are fucking deviants.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, let's, I don't know, I think the thing this world needs more than anything is just fucking complete honesty. It's hard to do, but.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think that's.
Well, this kind of wraps back into what we started talking about, like, you know, with the subject of podcasts, too, though. I mean, a lot of people are being more honest and out there with how they feel about things.
And,
well, that's it. Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
a lot of what you see on Facebook is like, oh, yeah, having such a great day.
Oh, God.
You know, but that's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
But no, I'm sure. I don't listen to enough podcasts, but there are definitely ones that are amazingly honest.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And like I said, like, I wish we could do more of that. But I just don't understand, like, I don't know, it goes back to advertising. Like, advertising doesn't want to be associated with anything, like, risque. But here's an example. Like, I love Ludacris, right?
Uh-huh.
So if he hears this, you know, I love you, Ludacris. But I love his songs are like...
Avid listener, Ludacris.
His songs are like, you know, fucking hardcore, right? Like, rapping about bitches and shit. And yet, he hosted the Nickelodeon Awards.
Did he really?
Yeah, last week. But, like, if my buddy, who's up for,
that's
like...
That's funny.
Is that no one thinks about that.
Right, right.
So, for me, that's like, huh? Which, I'm fine with it, but it's just, like, my buddy, who's, like, up fucking for doing, like... He was up for doing a corporate last week for, like, Charles Schwab or something. Like, well, some of his material, he says the word shit. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you know what I'm saying?
It's
like,
yeah.
There's just like a lot of like that.
Well, that's it, you know, and that's something that's been going on in stand-up comedy for a long time. Well, not a long time, but in the past couple of years, like, you know, a lot of people being oversensitive to certain types of jokes.
Oh yeah, that's
you know
fucked
things
up.
Like that. I mean, does that bother you at all? Like
beyond,
yeah,
beyond. You know,
now do you think that's because you're a male comic? Like I'm kind of going into the whole rape joke, the rape joke kind of thing. But
all right, what's the rape joke thing?
Well, like joking about rape. There's been, you know.
Oh God, the censors.
Fucking lights, man.
You know what? I don't. Wait, like joking about rape is why.
Don't you remember all this coming?
Yeah,
coming
I do remember.
Head, like a,
here's
like
the thing.
A couple years ago,
I never did. Rape jokes, and then I had a friend sometimes write me some material, and he's really good, and he put a rape joke in, and it was just like a joke, and I tried it, and people hated it. I'm like, dude, I don't think you can joke about this.
Yeah.
And then he wrote a joke about how you can't joke about rape, which is pretty funny, but even just mentioning the word it's just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, fucking sad for society because it's basically, you know, it's touching a nerve in somebody there.
Right, right.
And so, and then I started
Do you think that's a bad thing? Like,
but wait, I started hearing about it, and I guess women were like, yeah, I'm the white comedians talk about rape, so I don't want to do it anymore. Now go ahead, what were you going to say?
Oh, okay.
So I guess it was a big deal.
Yeah, I mean.
What were you saying?
I kind of lost my train of thought.
About.
You know, there is a certain sensitivity to certain subjects, whether it be, you know, homosexuality or rape or it could be anything, racial issues, you know, tensions in transgender community or something like that. But
I mean, oh, that's just stupid to me. I mean, like, I'm totally with Jerry Seinfeld. It's just, I mean, and he's, you know, one of the legend, you know, comedians of all time.
Sure.
And if he, who's just a smart, funny, witty comedian, if he's complaining about PC, you know, he's never offensive to me, and I've been watching him since I'm 10 years old.
Yeah.
So.
That's actually one of the things that surprised me most about what he said.
But so because I mean, if he's saying it's PC, then
it's like one of the cleanest comedians
ever.
Yeah.
So then it's really PC because, and I agree with him. I think it's fucking terrible that it's PC, and I'll go in with audiences sometimes, and recently I get like, oh, and I'm like, is it really an oh? Is it really an oh? Or and I'll say like, this is stand up comedy. It's not stand up literally. Like it's not literally happening. And I think that, you know, you love or hate Trump, whatever you feel. I do think that he is basically saying, you know, hey, this is what I'm going to fucking say. Now, you know, he's got his own thing going on, and he's kind of just, I think he just wants to, you know, just do it because he wants more Trump time. And,
right, right.
You know.
I think that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we all know he's got the ego and such.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do like the fact that he says things on PC, and it's, I think, I do like that. But
yeah,
PC's terrible. It's terrible, and there's a difference between, again, this goes back to common sense. Like, listen to what the person's saying. Here's the thing that people say. They worry about words. They don't worry about intent. What's the fucking intent behind something?
Sure.
You know, if I said, hey, man, you fucking broccoli, you motherfucking broccoli, right? You would just laugh, right? Because I said the word broccoli, but it was another word. But what if I was really angry when I said it?
Uh-huh.
Is it the word or is it the intent?
Right.
To me,
right.
Everything's intent.
And it's about who the joke is on, too,
yes.
Right? That's something that I hear a lot. And I don't know what side I actually come down on the whole PC debate.
You like, don't?
I don't, really.
Why?
Because it doesn't bother me not being able to tell a joke about something.
But it's not.
But I'm not a stand-up comic either, so.
But like, first of all, I can't even express some of the certain things in here because I don't want to be judged. But, like, there are jokes within comedic circles that are so, like, politically incorrect. That are so, like, all comics. What I love about it is when you hear them, you go on the road, they'll say a joke, and comedians will go, okay, yeah, I'll get it. And he'll go, like, I just can't get it over on the crowd.
But
every city I go, I'll talk with an opener or someone who will tell me this. And it's, but the great thing is, it's like our own therapy group that we can express that. So my feeling is, if you don't talk about something, it grows. And it becomes cancerous. But there is a difference between talking about it in a smart way and just being, you know,
overly crass. Or
yes.
Something. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, and that's common sense. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, you know, I don't think anyone should go to a comedy club if they're going to be offended. Because if you're going to be offended.
I would agree with that.
There's no, because a comedy club is a place to let loose ideas, thoughts.
Sure. Sure.
And that is annoying. At times. Yes.
To answer your question, yes.
Yeah. because like sometimes like I was thinking like really, I'm at a place in my life where I don't even want to be funny. I was talking to other comedians. I don't
what? Come on.
Comedians really don't want to be funny. They just are. They're funny only to make something digestible to the general population. Because if not, it would be acidic. That makes sense?
It does make sense.
It's dressing up. Because if not, they're street philosophers, street psychos.
Right.
I look at people at Starbucks who are rambling and people like walk around them. I look at them and I go, I'm one step away. You know what I mean? That's how I feel. We're all a move away. And that's another thing that's going on in the world. Too many people are like secluding themselves and trying to be like, I'm in this box. And sorry, we're all in the same fucking box, man.
Yeah. Well, let's do this, man. Let's take our second musical break, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Jamie Kennedy. Just being super honest. It's the new Jamie Kennedy podcast. This is the first episode of your podcast right here, dude.
I love it. I love it.
All right. We'll be right back. It was worth a stroll. I may have sold my soul a long time ago, but I only loaned my heart to rock and roll. And in the middle of the night, you wrote up composing hate mail. When there was nothing left to say, you filed it away till you caught all your mistakes. Caught all your mistakes. Felt at home in the summer, it was worth a stroll. I may have sold my soul a long time ago, but I only loaned my heart to rock and roll. In the songs that came so easy, you never said if they were any good. You always gave up way too quickly when they said you should. I want to get back to talking about you and how you got into this whole business, because I think it's a pretty interesting story about how you got yourself into Hollywood.
Yes.
You grew up in Philly, like we were talking about.
Yes.
And then you moved down to L.A. just on a whim? Or what was it? Like, you knew that you wanted to do something?
When I was 15, I thought, like, you start going to, like, guidance counselors and shit like that. And,
yeah.
I mean, dude, I hated school. I think school was a complete waste of time for me.
Yeah.
I didn't learn that much.
I don't think it's for everybody.
No, it's totally overrated. And I learned how to spell and shit. Man, but that's all you need. I don't even need that anymore, man. I got a calculator and I got Google. I mean, what the fuck do you need, right?
And now you don't even have to read because Google will read it to you.
Yeah, so it's like, I do the whole history teachers. I'm sorry, you're going to be disrupted. And so, it's like, I go to school and I'm like, you know, my whole family are like academics. Not really, but I went to college. And I was just like, try college. Like, I had no desire. It would be like another 4 years of like a jail or like a probation. College is supposed to be like a little bit of a work furlough program, but it was still just some kind of containment. And so I always just thought, maybe I was naive. I just believed in the dream. I always thought you could just hustle and scheme and figure shit out and always get money, you know? And I thought like, you know, 50, 100 bucks a day, that's a good life, right? So I was like delivering pizzas.
Uh-huh.
And like as a 17-year-old, I made like 109 bucks one night on tips.
Yeah.
That's just good money now.
Yeah.
And I was
totally.
I could just like, you know, connive people or convince them or make them laugh. And I was my own boss. I had a fuckload of pizza. And I was like, this is it, man. I'm going to fucking do pizza. And
that's what heaven is.
Yeah. And I worked at Domino's.
Yeah.
And I worked at Little Caesars, too. And they both give you diarrhea, but Little Caesars is permanent.
Right.
But I was like, pizza.
Please tell me that's a practice bit. Do you have that? You need to add that into your act.
It might be. Well, I was like, pizza's the shit, right?
So, right.
And then I was doing that, and then, like, I was like, somebody was like, you know, you should really try acting. And I was like, Pennsylvania or Philly acting, you know, I was like, you know, saying to somebody in Seattle, hey, you should, you know.
Go to the youth theater.
Or, like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, just, hey, you should, I don't know, something really, go to the moon. I don't know.
Yeah, right, right.
So I go, and I'm like, I'm going to take a class, and I take a class, and it's like a mix of, like, old ladies and derelicts and, like, young wannabe, like, starlets, and, you know.
This is in Philly.
Yeah, miscreants. It's about 21 of us.
Uh-huh.
And the fucking teacher today, this day, is, like, one of the best actors I ever saw. She would talk to you, and you'd be mesmerized, and you'd be like, whoa. And she goes, oh, that was a scene from A Day in Wine and the Roses. I was like, what? She's like, yeah, I was just acting. And I was like, Jesus, she's so amazing.
Really?
And I think she was my first mentor in life. I'm sorry, Mom and Dad. But, like, who pushed me in a direction. And so
sure.
I did a scene, and then I forget what the scene was, and then I mixed it up. I played both parts.
Uh-huh.
And I mixed it with my partner, and she's like, you're great. You're like, you're the star of this class. And she's like, you should move out to L.A.
So she put it in your head.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, what would I do? And she's like, just go. And, like, when people ask me, like, how do you get an agent? How do you make it? How do you... Let me tell you what my fucking first mentor told me at 17 years
old.
To this day. She goes, you should just go. And I go, well, what do you mean? And she goes, just go. Just go for it.
Uh-huh.
And I go, well, how do I pay for my bill? She goes, it'll happen.
Yeah,
you'll
work
figure
it out.
Just go. You need to be in Hollywood. And I said, what? And she goes, go. And she goes, don't come back to class.
Really?
Yep. And that's
true. That's a true story.
100%. And I say, that teaches me everything you need to know. There, anyone who talks to me about it,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can't say anything about Bill Cosby anymore without, you know, his stuff coming up. But he was also from the Philadelphia area, and he had a great book. And, you know, he said, you know, the showbiz life, you won't do it. I mean, this is going to be a fucking terrible pun. It will do you. But it's in his book.
Oh, God.
But I know, it's so fucked up. But... But basically, he was saying, you know, and William Shatner, I read stuff on him and different mm-hmm. people. Basically, there's an overwhelming urge that will propel you forward.
Yeah.
And so no amount of pain, no amount of school, none of this shit will ever stop you because you're just propelled by this thing. And that's what I believe how you become successful, because
sure.
it's not like you're trying, you're just kind of following your path. I know that sounds kind of hippie.
No, not at all. And it makes sense.
And that's what happened, yeah. And I moved out to L.A., and then there's a lot of things I did. It took me about 4.5 years.
Well, you basically, so to tell people who don't know, it's like you basically became almost a professional extra, right?
I was an extra in Dead Poets Society. That's uh-huh. a long story, but I was able to just, it was shot in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
My teacher knew somebody, introduced me to somebody. They had to look at me.
Right.
And they looked at me, and they said, okay, I think you can be one. And
what scene are you in that?
I'm in the movie theater scene.
Okay.
Like, walking by. You can see my ear.
Nice.
Yes. And,
was that exciting, though? Like,
oh.
Being an extra in a movie, like...
Probably one of the most exciting things I've ever done to this day, because I was 18 and I got a free haircut.
Yeah.
I made $60 a day.
Yeah.
I got meals. I never worked at jobs besides the pizza where they would give you food.
Yeah.
And I was like, walked by and I would see Robin Williams. I saw a movie star.
Right.
And I was just like, this is... That's weird. Like, you don't see Robin Williams at Pizza Hut or Domino's, you know? Like, so... And then you saw all types of races, colors, creeds. It was like the subway again. And everybody wanted to be an actor.
Sure.
So I was like, oh, shit, this is the bomb. So I kind of felt very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved out to L.A. and I got a job catering, and it was at like a play. It was an interactive play called Tamara, and it was like set in the 1920s.
Okay.
And so you follow the concierge around the house, and as you're going, things will happen. So imagine like a big old like castle.
Okay.
And as you walk into a room, you see things. So it's a play. It's a great idea where people are acting in scenarios and you're following it. You don't sit down. You follow the play. Does that make sense?
Yeah. We've got something similar to
pretty
that.
Pretty dope.
Here in Seattle,
I have to think how genius it is now that I haven't done it. That was like 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And I met a really, really hot girl named Rhonda. And like they cast all these hot waitresses. And I was a bus boy in it. But I wasn't in the play. I was actually a bus boy.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, they liked me. And so I was just seen. I had no lines or anything. But we really were the bus help, but we had to look like the 1920s.
Right.
And she would tell me, she's like, honey, you don't want to be a fucking extra. I'm like, why? This is a great life. She's like, you want to be an actor.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
so what? You were becoming complacent in being an extra in a whole.
I reached my goal.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'm
that's
an extra.
That's where you thought it was like, that's it, man. Yeah. That's where
like,
I'm going.
I was like a TV movie.
Yeah.
You know, Eric Estrada, Kirk Cameron. I was like walking behind the scenes and I was like in, you know, like a high school auditorium scene. I mean, this is all I need. Like,
right.
You know, and I'll do this. And like, I'm 18, 19. And then, like, she was like, no, you really want to be an actor, and this is how it works. And then she hit me to the whole
game. I love how every time every time you take a step up, it's somebody else that's being like, you need to step up.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know,
are you really that lazy?
No. I'm actually, I think it's healthy because that's how naive I was.
Sure.
And the thing is, it's like all these people go, I'm going to be a star.
Right.
I've got a deck of bed. And it's like they have all these expectations and they have all of this moxie and they think they're huge in their small little town of Lubbock, Texas, and they're the fucking queen. Okay. Well, you're going in the fucking hellhole of Sharkville. Okay. So I literally didn't know shit. Yeah. So, like, well, I'll be an actor, like, fucking acting class, wow, boom. Then she tells me, and then I go to extra, and I'm like, boom. And she's like, oh, you can be an actor. And I was like, boom. And so I literally had such little expectations that it was beautiful that I just – this is a deeper story, but I actually equate sometimes some of my fucking fucked up thought processes to be other people because, honest to God – only reason I do this business is because other people told me. I never had a dream of like, I'm going to be a rock star.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a comedian. I don't know why I'm using that voice. I'm going to be an actor. I'm great.
Your inner monologue is really annoying, man. Yes. Just really grating.
I was just like, I'm fucking just, people always said, you're weird, you're funny, you're off.
Yeah.
And so like they propelled me, which is, And I think it's the good way because I
think that's fantastic.
Yeah, because it was other people were telling me as opposed to like thinking I wasn't sucking my own dick.
Right.
You know what I mean? Other people were giving me hand jobs.
Yeah, it wasn't driven by ego. It was more driven just like, okay, I'll try that.
His place. Sure. Well, here's his place. Like, your place is this. And so then my long story short is I started like learning what acting is. And then I tried to get the whole Asian thing and, you know, and that's.
What do you mean, Asian thing? What do you mean by
agent?
That? Oh, agent.
That's pretty funny though. The Asian thing. I had an Asian face.
I was like, oh yeah, okay.
They made me feel like John Holmes.
I'm so sorry. Oh man.
I got
man.
An Asian agent. Hello, PC. Good morning.
Right.
But you go and you try to do these things. And another thing is there was an improv group.
Mm-hmm.
This is another propeller. Someone said, you know, you probably get an improv. I auditioned and I got in an improv group right away.
Yeah.
And I got paid. And so we go around
it's
schools.
It's always good.
And then we make like $40 a show.
Yeah.
And we did like two shows a week. I was making like $80 a week. And it wasn't a ton of money, but it was like that along with my pizza. And then that stopped. And then I worked at ABC Studios as the coffee boy.
Okay.
And I used to deliver coffee to all, to General Hospital. And every day, like, I put my headshot with the coffee.
Yeah.
To Mark Teschner.
Really?
Who was the big casting director. And every day, like, I would come back and, like, coffee stains would be on it. And, like, finally, like, one day.
Did,
like,
that hurt at all? Did
all, it? All, every day.
Yeah,
every,
okay.
You know, all, it hurt horrifically.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Like, people are like, I always knew I was going to make it. Really? I never knew I was going to make it.
Yeah,
I
just thought,
well, fuck, man. This is, I am got nothing. And then one day they called me in and I auditioned for, like, the role of, like, a coffee boy or something. And I still didn't get it. And I was like, fuck! And then I had, like, this.
You should have given it. You should have given them the headshot with the coffee with stain, the coffee on, stain it, on that it. Would have just sealed the deal.
Yeah. And then I had another guy, and I don't remember his name, and he was wildly flamboyant.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do all these voices and impressions in the back of the coffee truck. And he'd go, you should do stand up. Like, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to this open mic. I went to, like, one of my first, probably like my third gig ever was at a gig, was at a gay club, which also I encourage comedians to play. And I did, it's a club in LA, and it was $100 to the winner.
Yeah.
There was a lot of these back in the
day. So this was the contest that you told me about earlier.
The contest I'd won at the Hilton.
Gotcha.
Then I went to a Marriott, and I bombed. And then I was going back and forth with, like, you know, trying to do it again. And he's like, you got to, this was after, he told me this, and then I did a couple contests. And then he told me that I should do this gay club.
Okay.
So it was called Rage, and it's still there. And he's like, you know, it's $100. And I was like, okay, which is a lot of money still this day. And I go up, and I walked up. My first thing, I go, hi, guys. I just started doing this. I was like, because it worked in the black club. I was trying to talk.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, like, white people were trying to be like, and they loved it. And I was like, this is crazy. And I did some kind of joke. And I think I stole a joke from Gary, who was a gay comedian on the open mic circuit.
Oh, no.
But I think he told me I could use it. It was like, it was the guy from Bewitched, you know, Uncle Arthur or whatever,
okay.
Paul Lynn, singing Phil Collins, and he goes, so, remember that guy? So, and so I think I went out and I went, hi, guys, this is Paul Lynn. And, like, he kills with it, right?
Yeah,
like, we're not
playing
a gay club. And I get up there, people are like, boo!
Oh,
fuck
no.
You!
Oh,
and
no.
And I just remember going, you're not pretty enough to be gay! Like, hilarious.
Wait,
shit.
Wait, somebody fucking yelled that at you?
Oh, yeah, horrific shit. Fuck you, small dick. All this shit. I'm like, you haven't even seen it. And I ran out of West Hollywood, lost the competition.
Oh my God!
And,
so
but those are the three steps of how I started comedy and acting. And
but how did how did you even get to a point where you actually even started enjoying that?
Oof.
Like, I mean, because everybody
takes,
you know,
a while.
Everybody talks about the rejection and how terrible it is and everything like that, but I'm still flabbergasted by the.
I'll tell you what it is.
Okay.
I'll tell you what it is. I mean, you know.
You don't even know what it is.
I don't even travel. I don't travel in, like, comic circles, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm friends with some comedians, but I'm not, like, in a comedian group or anything like that. And so maybe it's different, but, like, you know, when Robin Williams died last year. You know, Dr. Drew calls me on, and I go on HLN, and he's talking about, well, do comics have a lot of depression? And I'm like, fuck. And I didn't even get to say half my shit, which I wanted to say, which is,
right.
Fuck. Yes. And to me, for me, my road, and I would be interested to hear what other people think is, I'm sure there are very healthy people, and I'm not saying I'm unhealthy, but
sure,
comedy was the last resort. You know what I mean? Like, I was told, like, I should go and do this, but I had nothing going on. I wasn't going to college. I was just going to go from menial job to menial job. I got fired a ton of times from, like, you know, fast food places, massage therapy places. I mean, like, I did, like, working at 24-hour fitness, like, shining the weights. I mean, like, the worst fucking jobs, soul-sucking jobs. But I was always smart and, like, can figure stuff out, and I would impress people, but, like, I was, like, on the earning scale the lowest.
Right,
so,
right.
Comedy, I knew that was, like, something that could take me to a higher place, but it wasn't like I enjoyed the process.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't. I fucking didn't enjoy going on stage and having people just judge the shit out of me. Right. It's terrible. So it's brutal, and it was only because I knew it could lead to better things. But the fucking means to the end was not great.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it takes a lot of practice, and you get used to it. And, like, I remember just this period in my life where I would bomb every fucking night.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, this is terrible. Like, I am not good. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do, and I have no money. And, like,
right.
a few comedians were like, you know, you got that one joke, and there's a premise. And, like, if I literally lived from laugh to laugh. Like, I remember I would do all these coffee houses in the early 90s in L.A. and all this stuff way before Starbucks. And if I could just squeak out a laugh from something, I'm like, I'm on the right path. That's all I needed. And that's how you build. But I had nothing else to do, and there was nothing else that I could do or really wanted to do but could do. I couldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe in my heart of hearts I could not have lasted in a normal job. That would have, I would have fucking just blown up the place.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I totally get that.
And so
I've had a few jobs like that.
Yeah. And it's and so I can't complain. I can't shit on anything. It's like, this is my choices. So if things were terrible, it was my choice.
Yeah.
I was living this life.
Yeah,
and nobody owed me anything. But it's not like you go, oh, let me go in front of this coffee house in front of 18 people, 16 of them are comedians who are dying for stage time, and two homeless people. And let me see if I can work on this Jerry Lewis Ted Knight impression. You know, it's like they're like, yeah. That's,
but you did it, man. You worked on your craft, and you slogged through a ton of shit.
Yeah. I was, unfortunately, I knew, I had the foresight to know that it's a young man's game.
Yeah.
And I knew that what I was going to give up in my college, I'm going to get in life experiences. My mom always said that too. She's like, your college is 101. And, and I knew that I could take it. I was young, I'm healthy.
Yeah.
And you can just go out.
Right. Right.
And go through the shit. And eventually, you know, you find it's not hard. Hollywood's not hard to figure out. You know, there are times like I've been.
But it's got to be hard to get in, though. It's not hard to figure out, to figure out the process, but
it is very hard. I think there's less barrier to entry now, but there's a lot more noise, so it kind of makes up for it. So
right.
You can have a YouTube page, but everyone has one. But if you can make yours popular, Hollywood will go, ooh, shiny thing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
But. Yeah. It is hard. That's the and the ups and downs I have in my career are due to the fact of that, of still gatekeepers going, like, you know, there are times before it was like, who's Jamie Kennedy? And now, you know, there are times where it's like, well, Jamie Kennedy. You know what I mean? So it's sometimes having a name doesn't help you at all. You know, I'm up for this other part and something right now, and they're like, that's an outside the box idea. Like, you know, so it's like, now I'm a thing.
Yeah.
But,
well, it seemed like there for a time, especially in the mid 90s or even late 90s, you were like ubiquitous with everything. Like, I used to see your face on everything.
I know.
And in everything. I just watched Scream last night.
Yeah.
By the way. And was like, I was like, man, this movie was fucking great.
I know, it still holds up.
It still holds up. It's so good.
Yeah.
You did a great job in that movie, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I love that movie.
Yeah, I would say from, like, 95 to 2000, I was working on my, you know, coming up in the game and getting acting roles.
Sure.
And then from 2000 to 2005, I started becoming my own name, started headlining stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, I had some things that didn't work. And then I kind of went, you know, cold. And then in 2008, I started doing The Ghost Whisperer, and that was like a TV show. And that So that had some different appeal, more like I call like a Midwest mom appeal. And now, you know, back and forth, the last couple of years, I've done some, you know, stuff like Entourage, little guest spots mm-hmm. here. And now I'm working on a new show on NBC, which hopefully will get hot. So
with D.L. Hughley.
D.L.'s right. here.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, that's how it is. But there are times when you get cold, and it's just like you're cold.
But have you acclimated yourself to the down times, or is it still kind of soul-crushing? Is it still a soul-crushing
meaning,
experience?
Meaning, acclimated, meaning make peace with it?
Yeah, or just like, you know, when you do have down times with the career, like, you know, maybe it's harder to come by some jobs or something like that, or some gigs. Is it still kind of a crushing feeling, or is it like, okay, there'll be on to the next thing?
I think it's finally getting to the healthy place.
Yeah?
But yes, it's very painful. It's a lot less.
Right.
But it was painful for mm-hmm. many years mm-hmm. when you know, you think you're very good and you've done some amazing things and then you've done some bad things and people only judge you for the bad things and they don't, you know, understand that like certain things you're just an actor for hire and you try to make them good. And
Right.
And so, no, that hurts. But then you kind of study the scope of a career and there's very few people that don't have downs. There's a few, but they're very few. And, you know, a career is peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
And so I now look at myself, I'm 45 years old. I have 22 years in the game.
Yeah.
I've been doing this since I'm 23. I'm a thing. I'm a name. And we're all a move away. You know, we all are a move away from a good part, a good stand-up special, whatever it is. And men really come to their own, fine wine it. From 45, they can have a nice 20-year. Look at Liam Neeson. You know, he's older.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so I got excited again. And the thing is, I feel is all the knowledge I've had from all of the ups and downs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now I can go, okay, I look at this and I say, this is a wonderful life. And it's also a job.
Right.
So I don't really got to go like, oh, fuck, it's this premiere at Man's Chinese. It's great, but it's part of the job. You know,
sure,
or
sure.
Here's a television junket, Entertainment Weekly. It's awesome. Am I mentioned? Great. Part of the job.
Yeah.
I try not to let it define me, but I also like to appreciate it, if that makes sense. Yeah.
And then there's the one in the middle that's, oh, there's a no-name podcaster in the green room in the basement in the comedy club.
Hey, man, this is one that really got me excited because this is what it should be. This is where the world should be.
Right?
Two bros hanging out. No, seriously, just in a microphone, talking, as opposed to all. You know what I say right now? And you tell me if I'm lying. Do you know what's going on?
What?
In talk shows? My theory, no one's talking in talk.
What do you mean?
No one's talking in talk. Think about what I just said.
No one's talking in talk.
Well, look at talk shows.
Right.
Most people aren't talking. Everyone's doing a bit.
That's,
a game or, you know, and God bless it. God bless it. I'm all for a game and different things like that, but I really do love conversation, and I feel that's really...
You're talking about, like, late night.
Yeah.
Late night talk shows.
Yeah.
Not
a lot. I wish there was more conversation.
I just had this conversation with a good friend of mine about, you know, how far removed we are from the days of Johnny Carson.
We are.
Right?
I mean, like, I don't want to say, God bless everybody. Everybody does their thing, and it's great that they're doing that.
Well, it's all about the viral hits now, right?
Yes.
You always have to create a bit that goes viral to get more attention to the show.
But can a good conversation do that?
I think it should.
Yeah. I mean,
I would like to think so. I mean, that's what I'm into as well.
I love the days listen, I'm all for a good bit. I'm all for people doing, you know, different bits. I do
sure.
like that.
Sure.
But let's mix it up. I just, you know, I love it when I would see, you know, George Gobel on the, I mean, that's old school, but like smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Having scotch.
Yes.
Talking, you know, what happened with a certain starlet. I mean, I like
right.
that
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
And I think there's a place for that.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
your podcast is that, I'm your guest.
So be it.
Yes.
Jamie Kennedy, thank you so much, man.
Dude, thank you. It yeah. was really it was really fun.
Good, good.
It was really freeing.
Awesome. Love it. Thanks, bud.
Appreciate you.
Well, man, this is a long one. We haven't had a long one like this for a while. This is awesome. But I'll tell you what, I really want to fucking murder that refrigerator in that green room at the Parlor Live, man. I swear to God, that thing is so loud. Every time we go down there, it's just like this loud, loud hum in the background, and it's quite annoying. But I hope you guys didn't mind it. I hope you guys didn't mind it. Maybe it's just something that bugs me. I don't know. Jamie Kennedy, everybody. Wonderful, wonderful human being. I had a fantastic time talking with him. I hope you guys enjoyed it this week. Once again, you can find him September 4th through the 6th in Tempe, Arizona at the Tempe Improv. Tempe, Arizona at the Tempe Improv. Man, I have trouble saying that. Maybe it's because I'm so tired from all the painting. I swear to God, my muscles are getting bigger from doing this. Like feeling my forearms earlier today. Don't ask me why. But I was just feeling my forearms, and they feel great. They feel strong. My wrists feel stronger, man. Good stuff. Good stuff. Why was he touching his forearms? That's weird. Oh, my God. I hope you guys enjoyed the music this week as well. Off of the label Sunburned Goth down in L.A. Thank you so much, Jesse, for sending us the 7-inch of the Pretty Flowers. Also, just totally jam-packed this package full of Star Wars stuff for my two daughters, which was very, very sweet. Very sweet. Somebody's been listening to this program. Oh, yeah. Once again, you can see the Pretty Flowers. They're going to be at the Echo in Los Angeles on August 31st. September 11th, they'll be at the Old Town Pub in Pasadena, California. So check that stuff out. All right. Okay, where's my sheet? Where's my sheet here, folks? I got it right here. You can subscribe to the Air Raid Podcast on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Only takes a couple seconds to give us a little star rating. We're now available on the Adore Network at adore.fm, also on spreaker.com, and of course, still at Stitcher, TuneIn, and the Cairo Radio apps, or just visit our website, air-raid.net, to subscribe directly to our RSS feed and check out all of the archived episodes for free. We don't charge you anything for that. Nothing, man. It's all free, right there for your listening pleasure. 264 episodes of Air Raid. Our Twitter handle is @AirRaidNet. You can like our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheAirRaid Podcast or email me directly at Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell someone about this show. Bring it up in conversation. Tell them that you heard a great conversation and you'd like them to check it out as well. Right? Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your cousins. Sign them up when they're not looking. That's the way to do it. No inspirational quote of the week this week, folks, because I've been on my journey, my house painting journey. You guys are so sick of hearing me talk about that. So we're just going to go with our closing song of the week, The Pretty Flowers. This one's called Panama. And we'll be back next week with an all-new episode of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.